there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff with the No Look Pass, and I have my cohort in crime across the table from me. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
How about you say hello to the rest of our listeners as well?
Well, yeah, we were just listening to an old radio program on Chris Radio, so I was kind of in the mood for an old radio program joke. But hello, everyone. Welcome to the sports show.
Yes. As Brian has said, we talk sports, and we have some sports going on here in Chicago that some people are excited about. We have Chicago Cubs team that's in the World Series for the first time since 1945, which is a long time, way back when. So we'll just get right into talking about the Cubs. So what did you see last night with the game?
I went pretty much as you would expect. Cleveland, because of a stupid decision by Major League Baseball to award the home field advantage to the team that wins the All-Star game, had home field advantage, and they did what you're supposed to do, win at home.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see signs that were positive for the Cubs. Their bats weren't all that quiet. They did get hits. They filled the bases. They just didn't capitalize on some of the opportunities that they had. So, you know, even though they lost last night, I still feel pretty good about their chances.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that one. And, I think you have an Indians team that is well-rested. They finished their series basically a week before they had to even start the World Series. So, for me, I was thinking that maybe they were going to come out a little rusty, their bats weren't going to be able to get going, but maybe that rust gave them a little extra juice, and they were at home, and the crowd got them pumped up a little bit, and so paid off for them last night. We'll see if the Cubs can bounce back tonight. The positive part about it is they got Kyle Schwarber back, which is a positive move, and having him as DH in those Cleveland home games, I think is going to help having an extra bat. And then even in these games at Wrigley, I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Maddon uses him relatively early in games for some pitch hitting. I don't know if he's going to play out in the field. I don't know if he's prepared for that or ready for that quite yet, but I think you can see him having a few spots that Joe Maddon has picked out in his brain of how he would be using Schwarber to their advantage in certain circumstances throughout the series.
Well, yeah, I felt that Schwarber would probably hit a home run last night, and he came pretty close. He hit one off the center field wall, and even though the announcers didn't portray it that way, it was close to being a homer. So that guy can hit, and he's a natural hitter, and the Cubs recognize that, so that's probably why he's there. And other guys, Zobrist has been hitting, and I got to think after last night, Addison Russell, saw the performance of Lindor, and he himself has to be somewhat motivated. But I think looking at the game, and maybe I was just, maybe it was just my own thinking, but it looked like to me that the Indians had a great sense of urgency because they realized that the Cubs are a powerful offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they have some bats and they can hit and put together runs, the Cubs at any point could just jump up and score, eight runs, maybe even 10 runs. And, that could be the game.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit earlier that, for me, looking at the Cubs, it's been a bit feast or famine with the Cubs, that they'll go a game or two and they'll be getting lots of runs, and then they'll go one or two games where they have no runs and very few hits. And so hopefully they don't fall into a slump here. Maybe it's just a one bad game and feeling out what the Indians are doing, and now you'll have a little bit of a game plan of how to go after this team, both offensively and defensively. I have to say, the person that I have been really impressed with throughout this entire playoff run, and I think is the MVP for the Cubs, is Javi Baez. I just think that this kid seems to be in the right spot at the right time defensively. He's playing really, really well. And offensively, he seems to always get these clutch hits. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see some more Javi Baez magic going on here. And we were talking about the pitching change for today. You were telling me that Arrieta is going to be pitching tonight. And what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's fine. I think they want to make sure that Kyle Hendricks gets his normal days of rest before he pitches again. So mm-hmm. that means that he would pitch a Saturday. And Arrieta, he came from Baltimore, so he's familiar with the American League, mm-hmm. As all the pitchers are for the Cubs, actually, except for maybe Kyle Hendricks. I don't know if he pitched in the American League or not. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fine. And Arrieta has a chance to come out and pitch well, and I don't want to say it, but I'll say it, redeem himself for the game that he lost against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. But overall, it still looked like the Cubs were just about to break through and break out mm-hmm. in that game last night. I don't know. We'll have to see how it goes tonight. I would expect that they would win tonight. I'll say it.
Yeah, I expect them to bounce back tonight as well. I think I actually ended up switching over after I saw them not get in a run after having, I think it was the bases loaded or something like that, in the top of the sixth, I think it was.
Right.
And they had one out and they couldn't get in that run. That was kind of like, I thought that was their opportunity to bounce back into the game. And so I ended up switching over to basketball to kind of see what was going on with the Cavaliers and the Knicks. And so I ended up switched back to the ball game a little bit and then just kind of fell asleep. So I didn't get to see the end of the game, but then when I saw the end outcome being 6-0, I didn't really miss much from the Cubs side of it.
But it was still kind of misleading because the positives that came out of it is even though Kluber struck out however many people he struck out,
yeah.
they still hit him, mm-hmm. and they hit Miller, the reliever. And
yeah.
I think that those are good signs, particularly hitting Miller going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. I definitely think that this game tonight is going to be a big one for them to, basically give them that extra advantage of going home and knowing that they have a game already in their pocket because they're really good at Wrigley Field. They, I think, had the best home record out of any team that played it. I think they were in the single digits on how many games they lost actually at Wrigley.
Right. And really, if you think about the game, Cleveland, they broke through in terms of scoring on
right.
really what was kind of a lucky play. I hate to say it, I don't want to take anything away from them, but I forget exactly who, but one player swung away at the ball, and I think the bases were loaded or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
And the effect of it was that it wound up not really being a ball that even got out of the infield.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had the effect of being like a bunt.
Yeah.
And none of the Cubs were prepared to field it. They couldn't get to it. And then that opened the door for the runs. And so I think that sort of propelled the Indians forward. Conversely, if that ball that Schwarber had hit had gone out, mm-hmm. then I think that would have had the kind of effect that the bunt play had in the Dodger series that the Cubs had that turned things around in
yeah.
that series. So, it should be a fun game tonight if
yep.
they can get it in if it doesn't rain.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw what the ratings were last night, but they actually said that it was close to what a Super Bowl the Super Bowl ratings would be, which is pretty crazy to think about it because it is only two markets that you really, that would be mainly watching it. But I think because both of these teams have not been in a World Series in so long, I think it just magnifies how many people want to watch this, especially from the Cubs side of it, of
right.
them having the 108-year drought of not winning a World Series. I think it just tonight might even be more because of them being one game down. I think people will be more interested to see will they bounce back, or is this going to be more of the same of the Cubs, do they have enough to be able to pull it out? So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the ratings are tonight, and with them moving up the game an hour early, will Chicago itself be having a lot of people leaving their work early, or like I was telling you, instead of calling in sick, they called in World Series, deciding that they weren't even going to come into work just because of the World Series being a little bit earlier and not wanting to deal with the traffic, trying to get out of the city or into the city, whatever they decide to do. But it's cool to see, like, because this was their first time that they, like any playoff game for baseball this year has been on regular TV. And so I wish that they would bring some of those games back, like, you know, the weekend or something, to be able to have more of the playoffs on regular TV. I know they won't because they like their money, but I think you're missing out on a lot of people being able to watch playoff baseball that don't have cable, who would really enjoy like watching at least a couple games of the playoffs on the weekend.
Right. Well, just to go back a little bit, that player who they gave him credit for having a single, but it actually was more of a bunt, was Ramirez,
okay,
the third baseman, mm-hmm. and that's when the first two runs scored. And, you know, I think calling in World Series, I don't think he'd get away with that unless you're in Chicago, but I think he might be able to if you call in Cubs.
Yeah.
I'm calling in Cubs, not coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might see a different outcome tonight. At least I hope we do.
Yep. Moving on from the Cubs, we normally would cover the Sox since we're in baseball, but I didn't really see anything for Sox. Did you?
Only that ESPN did some sort of promo package about the World Series and the teams that have had success winning championships in Chicago, and they left off the 2005 White Sox.
Interesting.
And people, of course, called up and complained. Jermaine Dye, he tweeted his displeasure about that, and they fixed it.
Uh-huh.
But that's the only thing that I've seen that even remotely at this point has anything to do with the White Sox.
Okay. Yeah, they're relatively quiet. I was hoping that they would have started really, really early trying to bring, you know, some players in, but are trying to talk to some players, at least hearing some rumors of stuff. But it's whisper quiet, unfortunately, for the White Sox, which, you know, they got quite a few months to be able to make some moves and whatnot.
Yeah, but, well, I think isn't there some sort of deadline or something in there, or some time before they can start to talk to people and make deals or something like
so,
that?
I think so, yeah. I think it's January or February. I think it's January when they have their... There's some type of convention that they have where most of the trades tend to happen, where all, the entire baseball is basically all the organizations are in one place. So you start to see all these trades happening on this specific weekend. And I want to say it's January that this happens. So we got a few months before we hear any big moves, but normally there's rumors of what, you know, offices are kind of talking about of which way they want to go with, you know, especially with the coaching change. Do they want to change pitching rotations around? Do they want to change the offense? What, you know, they give you an idea of what they're looking for moving forward, and haven't really heard much of that quite yet, but it is still new, and, you know, they got some time. Moving on from baseball, we can touch on the Bears.
That Bears.
They're going up against a very, very tough defensive team in the Minnesota Vikings. The plus side is the Vikings didn't really look very good out of their bye last week. They basically lost because of the Philadelphia defense. The Philadelphia defense was able to hold the Minnesota Vikings. I think I saw something where it was like 150 yards or less that they actually had as an offense for Minnesota. So if the Bears can, you know, get a few turnovers or, you know, get some pressure in Bradford's face, I think that they have a good chance of maybe pulling this game out. But it really will have to, I think, rely a little bit on the defense. The unfortunate part of it, I think, for a lot of fans is they were really excited about what Brian Hoyer was able to do. Each week he was getting better, and now he's on injured reserve, and now we have good old trusty Jay Cutler back in behind center. So what do you feel about, you know, Cutler being back, the Bears' chances of being able to take down the Vikings? Do you think they have a chance, or is it going to just the defense of the Vikings going to overwhelm Cutler too much?
No, I don't think the Bears would beat the Vikings. But, you know, I'll have to say that the Bears' defense, I think, played well last week, and they have been playing well and getting better each week as they get some of their top guys back. So that's always fun. But the offense just could not score. And as well as Brian Hoyer played, two things I noticed he couldn't do. He couldn't throw the deep ball consistently or with much accuracy. And then he couldn't, you know, get the team in the end zone as being the quarterback. And those were two deficiencies that prevented them from winning games.
Yeah.
If you look at the season, they should have only have lost of the six games they've lost, two of those games. I think the other games they should have won. As far as Jay Cutler comes back, wow, that's huge. Did you read in the paper about hear that he said Fox has no choice but to turn back to him?
Yep.
Wow.
Which is interesting because Fox basically said, well, Cutler already knew what the game plan was moving forward, and we're glad to have him back. And so it's just interesting because it's just... I think John Fox kind of is just saying what he needs to say as a coach to be able to get his team behind him, you know, that everybody's on the same page. But in essence, I don't think he wants anything to do with Jay Cutler. Once the season's over, I wouldn't be surprised if they see you later, Cutler. Good luck with the rest of your career.
Well, two things about that. First of all, I wonder if he was capable of playing in weeks past, but they didn't bring him back because they had Hoyer. It seems mighty coincidental, I don't know, that Hoyer gets hurt and they don't have a quarterback really except for the backup Barkley, who's not ready.
Right.
And then all of a sudden Jay Cutler is cleared and he's healed. And they did this within a matter of days. And there was no other discussion of bringing him back. They weren't even talking about his finger and if he was capable of playing. So it kind of looks like to me that he could have played, but he wasn't playing because they were going with Hoyer. And secondly, reading Mike Mulligan online today, he said that everybody who's close to Fox, knows that he doesn't want anything to do with Cutler after this season.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how Cutler, is not only playing for the Bears now, but auditioning for where he might end up next year.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that actually pays off where they actually get some victories and go on a run so it doesn't look so bad for the Bears. Because right now it's pretty ugly. The only team that they look better than is the Browns. And, you know, Browns are still don't have a win. So, the team needs to get going somehow. But I don't know if you heard this or not, but they're shopping around Jeffrey. That the Eagles seem to be the most interested in bringing him in. I heard that from, like, Bleacher Report reported it and Fan Cited and stuff like that. And they're the ones that seem to always have the rumors and stuff. Do you think that the Bears would be willing to part with Jeffrey? And what do you think would be the potential of, you know, what they could get in return? I think they could probably get something good.
Yeah, they probably could get a couple of serviceable players. But no, I think it's okay. I don't think that he has really fulfilled the role of being a top wide receiver the way that the Bears want him to be. He's done the best that he could, but he doesn't seem to have that personality that you'd be looking for. You know, somebody like, and this is exceptional receivers like a Michael Irvin or even a Dez Bryant. I don't even know if those guys would fit in Chicago, but... You know, you'd like to see somebody who is a little more, displays a little more leadership and a little more vocal than what Alshon has done. And then on Sunday, someone who goes out and he plays with a sense of, you know, like his hair is on fire or something.
I just wonder, like, with them, when they got rid of Brandon Marshall, they got rid of him because he was being so vocal and they felt like he was being disruptive. I wonder if John Fox would actually, being the coach that he is, seeing that fire, I wonder if he would actually like someone like Brandon Marshall. You know, it's, you know, mute now, but I just wonder, did they send him away 1 year too soon? If they would have kept him for the John Fox era, I wonder if they would have actually seen him as a potential leader moving forward.
Well, when I say vocal, I don't mean someone who says negative things, okay. but, you know, kind of almost like a rah-rah guy or somebody, if you look at some of the past John Fox teams, like Musin Muhammad, when he was with Carolina, Steve Smith, receivers like that, you know, that if they could find someone with that type of makeup to bring in, that's what I'm talking about. I don't think he'd want like a player who's going to come in and be vocal and say the wrong things. I don't think anybody wants that.
I think they're relatively in a bad spot and disappointed with, you know, not seeing anything out of Kevin White, and he just continues to get injured. I think that really puts them in a tough spot because he was taken so high last year, and it really, you haven't been able to see much from him. And I think that's really kind of taking a bit of the wind out of their sails of how good this team could be offensively, not having that other guy on the other side. Like when they had Brandon Marshall and Jeffrey on each side and Forte, you know, I think they have a running back in Jordan Howard, and they just need that extra piece, be it a, you know, overwhelming tight end or another wide receiver that can take over a game. Because it seemed like there was the year with both Jeffrey and Marshall that they were taking turns, basically going back or have a couple games of one and then the other one would take over, and it was really hard to shut down both. I think that's really where the Bears need to try and find that, and unfortunately if they trade Jeffrey and you really don't know what you have in White, Meredith is stepping up quite a bit, but I don't know if he is going to be that like key guy that you can rely on.
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to be a third receiver.
Yeah.
The guy that someone they could, the type of player that they could really use would be someone like Donald Royal. If Donald was bigger.
Eddie Royal.
Or Eddie Royal. Mm-hmm. There again, the basketball reference. Eddie Royal, if he was bigger, if he was as big as Alshon Jeffrey, he seems to be the type of player that they need. He goes out and does his, you know, business every week. He catches a ball, runs after the catch, all of those things. But, you know, he's a slot receiver. He's a little smaller guy.
Yep.
But maybe they might give him that opportunity. Who knows? But I don't know. I think they know what they have in Kevin White. He just hasn't been able to play. And that's been his problem. So I don't know. But if they do trade Alshon, I would expect that they should get decent value for him. Because what is he, 6'4", 6'5"?
I would imagine. Because they ended up getting a first-round pick for Sam Bradford. So they have an extra first-rounder just for that. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got Jeffrey. That's what the Bears would be looking for, is probably a draft pick or two to be able to help kind of maybe solidify that. That might be the piece that they would basically replace him with, is whatever a first-round wide receiver would be coming out of college this year. That's what I would see. I don't think they're going to trade for another player, to be honest.
But they do need a quarterback, to develop a quarterback.
Yeah, but they're not getting Carson Wentz, so it would be, if they could use that draft pick for a quarterback, which would work. I think that's probably, those are the two options that they would probably, either a quarterback or a wide receiver, and you are right, it's probably more of a quarterback that they would go for, since Cutler looks like he is, you know, not going to be around after this year, and then Brian Hoyer is, he's more of that fill-in quarterback. Like, can give you, he's a very streaky quarterback, but as of winning some playoff games for you, I don't know if he has that in him to do so.
No, I don't know, because that's why they got rid of him in Houston.
Yep.
And he threw that interception.
And now they have the Brock Lobster over there, Brock Osweiler. They have him over there, and he's not doing much better. Actually, he's doing worse than what Brian Hoyer was doing for them last year. So, and they paid him a whole lot of money. Did you see anything else in football that you want to kind of touch on over the weekend or this week?
No, other than the Bears are getting Jeremy Langford back, but so they'll have that three-headed monster at the running back position. That should help Cutler.
Which is always great for fantasy.
Some people criticizing some people. Chad Ochocinco criticizing the NFL for... not allowing players to be themselves, to stifle their creativity, for being the no fun league.
Yeah.
And all those kinds of things. There's been that talk. There's been talk about the Josh Brown situation. And, of course, the Giants let him go.
Yep.
And they picked up who? Robbie Gould.
Yep.
Which is good to see him playing again.
Yep. I do somewhat agree. I miss the days of, you know, T.O., you know, taking out a pen and signing a football and throwing it out to somebody in the crowd, or... was it Ocho Cinco who like pulled out a phone, like act like he dialed the phone or the football and right. held the football? Like those things are kind of cool, and I like it. Football itself, I think, is kind of, it's not the same as it used to be, and I think it does have a little bit to do with you're kind of taking out the personality of what these players bring. And you should be able to let them celebrate if they want to touchdown. There are players who decide not to. There's, you know, there's Terrell Davis and LaDainian Tomlinson who literally just flip the ball off to the referee and run back. Adrian Peterson, same thing like that. They don't really do much, or they'd kneel down, say a prayer, that type of thing. And so I think when you take away the personality of these players, it does have a tendency to be a bit dry. Not to say that that's all that football is, but it has kind of, I think, downgraded a little bit in the quality that you're seeing on the field of the players. And then like we talked about this probably a month or two ago about just the injuries that have been, kind of rearing their ugly head more and more as the years are going on. And so football is becoming a little bit tough to watch on some weeks. Like even last week's game for the Bears, like I was bored watching this game. Like it was just a rough game to watch.
What was rough about it?
These teams were kind of both struggling to get anything going. It was very just, it was felt like there was no rhythm to the game. And it could have been just the defenses were playing a little bit better, and then eventually the Packers got going in the second half, but it was just that first half was really just, there was no rhythm. It was very, very slow moving. And normally I like defensive battles, but this was just seemed like more of ugly play than it was defenses playing really, really well. It was just neither offense seemed like they were prepared to play on Thursday. And I think that has a little bit to do with, like, you see it on a weekly basis, that the shorter time period of being able to prepare for a game right. for these football teams, the Thursday night games are really, really hard to watch.
Yeah, and what happens is the players don't get a chance to recover physically, mm-hmm. and, you know, that affects the Sunday games,
yep.
and then the Monday night games. And it used to be that NFL was appointment TV. If you didn't watch it on Sundays or Mondays, you didn't see it.
Yep.
You'd have to wait a whole week. So now you have a game basically every 2 days.
Right.
And then another thing for me, and it's kind of hard to talk about because I understand the need for it, but sometimes I'm watching the game and these players will make contact with another player's helmet and they'll throw the flag and uh-huh. they'll say, you know, that's an infraction.
Yep.
And I understand if it's overly aggressive, mm-hmm. if it's vicious, but sometimes it's just incidental in that they're trying to tackle.
Yeah.
And you have all these calls and then you have to sit there and explain why that was called, and it sort of takes away from the game. And also I think another thing that had a big effect on the game is the players union, for some reason, well, obviously they don't want to go through any more physical exertion than they have to, but
right.
I don't think they have as much contact during practice as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently that affects your ability to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I used to watch football and you would see a great hit, you know, a textbook hit, not necessarily mm-hmm. something where a player is slamming a quarterback into the ground
right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
But and you don't see that as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's part of the problem as well with football. And, of course, they're talking about ratings declining and that kind of thing, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just seems to be so somewhat of a dry experience now, as opposed to in the past where there was some excitement regarding the game when I would turn it on to watch it, and I'm kind of missing that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the penalties have made it really, really rough, because it's like every three plays there's a penalty. Like, it there's no pace to it. There's so many commercials. It's just, out of most of the sports you watch, other than maybe baseball is like relatively similar pace, but like you watch hockey and basketball, it's up and down. You're moving, there's lots of movement. You're able to see these dunks happen, a lot of physical plays. And so I think it's easier to watch these games. And so when you get excited about football is when they're actually having a game where they're letting them play a little bit more. They're not throwing a penalty when there's just incidental contact of like them both running for a football, and then all of a sudden maybe the DB accidentally trips over the other one and then they call a pass interference. Sometimes it's just incidental contact. Let them play, continue to just let the next play go, and don't stop for 30 seconds or a minute to be able to figure out what the penalty is. And so there's so many stoppages with the penalties, commercials, and then now you have, replay. So that day they basically check everything for replay, and it just slows down the pace of the game.
Two or three different angles.
Yeah, and so it ends up that, all these other, NBA, the baseball, all these sports are trying to figure out ways to shorten the game, where NFL is trying to figure out ways to lengthen the game, which it just... That's why some of the people I know don't even watch football, is because they feel it's just
too
long, and it's like for them it's just like watching golf, which it's not like that for me, but it's still, it's getting there that it's just really, really rough to watch these games because of so many stoppages.
And I think part of that has to do with television itself. I think television ruins the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who broadcast the game want to, as I call it, flex their technical journalistic muscle, and they want to cover the game in all aspects. Mm-hmm. You have, the thing that I hate is right before the game, there has to be an interview with a coach.
Right.
After the game, at halftime, there mm-hmm. has to be an on-camera with a coach. I was listening to the Knicks-Cavaliers game on XM Radio last night, and during the game, they had a soundbite interviewing the coach, talking about whatever they were talking about. Yeah. I think that's all unnecessary.
Right.
Just let the game unfold and mm-hmm. let me experience it as what they should be doing is trying to create the atmosphere that you would receive in the stadium
mm-hmm.
On television as close to as possible.
Right.
And they do the exact opposite. They mm-hmm. have so many analysts. And the thing I hate about baseball is, during the game, they're interviewing the manager or the pitching coach or a player
right.
in the dugout. And, I don't need to hear that anymore.
If I wanted to hear it, I'd just wait until the interview's after the game.
Right, or you read it in the paper the next day. Or...
I think it's unnecessary to have it during the game. Like, just wait until the end of the game, hear what they have to say. If you're really interested, there's so many channels you could be able to hear the press conferences. By all means, do that. But most people don't. They don't care about what they have to say
during
the game. They just want to watch the game.
Right. It's mm-hmm. not groundbreaking stuff. Yeah. Like I said before, I was so happy. I don't know if I said that on this show or told you previously, but I went to a boxing match several years ago at the venue in Indiana. And it was closed-circuit television. And it was hosted by the sportscaster for Channel 32,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember his name right now, and someone else.
Okay.
And during the match, the boxing match, in between the rounds, they would get up to comment on what we just seen. And the first time they tried to do that, everybody booed them down.
Yeah.
And they tried it again, believe it or not, during the next set of rounds. And they were booed down again, so eventually they just stopped.
Yeah.
So that's an indication to me that people, enough with the interviews. We don't need that. We're not stupid. We understand the game.
Right. Yeah, they seem to want to do that with every sport, that they feel like we aren't smart enough to know what's going on. It's like, we're watching it. We can see what's going on. If we wanted to get more information, we have plenty of ways of being able to do that on our own time. Don't take away from the game itself or match or whatever you're watching.
Yeah. Conversely, the things that I like, things like with baseball, John Smoltz talking about the reasons why he would throw a fastball as opposed to a slider and things of that nature, and how to set up a hitter, what a hitter might be thinking about. Those kinds of things are valuable, but a lot of the other stuff is unnecessary.
Yeah, from the player standpoint of breaking down a play and why you would do this in this specific situation, that stuff I enjoy, because just being a person who used to play those sports as a kid, you know, these were thought processes, maybe not to that certain extent, but that we would have of just game planning moving forward of, okay, this batter, you're going to do this, and the next batter, you want to hit them this way, or be able to figure out how to read certain situations better. I like that part of it, of just from the player standpoint, and like I said, those are fine if you're doing it during a telecast, but I think you have to watch how much you do it, because it does take away from...
Yeah,
you know,
the game.
The game, and then also making the person feel like, you don't have to talk down to me. I've been watching this game for my entire life. So it's a nice balance that you have to try and find, which I don't think that none of the sports have any idea how to balance it. So, but we've spent quite a bit on football, but and, you know, a little bit of other things. We'll move on to... let's go to the Blackhawks. The Bulls haven't started yet, so we'll get on the Blackhawks, and then we'll touch on the Bulls real quick after with that. So, Blackhawks, they're 3-3. They're looking okay. Not exactly where I was hoping they would be, but they have a lot of rookies. They have a lot of young kids that are on there. Six new players that really have not much experience at all. Crawford's struggling.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that, was it last Saturday, he wasn't even in the net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Darling's been doing okay when he's filled in. I think he's filled in two games so far, and he seems to be actually holding his own a little bit better. But they're giving up a lot of goals, which is never good to see when this team has actually been pretty good at kind of keeping teams from scoring for the last few seasons.
Penalty kill is horrible.
It is not good. Anytime a penalty is happening, I feel like it's probably going to be a goal for the other team. They just don't know how to stop teams at the moment. And I don't know what it is, because they were a very good penalty-killing team, and they have most of the same pieces that do the penalty kill, Taze and Keith and Jalmerson and Seabrook and all those guys. So you have the same guys. I just
don't know.
I don't know. I don't understand.
But it
what's
was
going
bad
on.
At times last year. It got better. So
yeah,
as they got closer to the playoffs and in the playoffs. So
yeah, I think that's just chemistry with the Blackhawks. They're having to try and learn each other. A few new players that they might not be used to. I think these top two lines. We kind of touched on this last week, that I think they're going to be okay. It seems like, you know, the Taze line and the Kane line, both of those two are doing pretty well, and it's good to see that the other lines are contributing. We do see some scoring happening from the third and fourth lines, which is something we didn't have a lot of last year. So I think right now it looks a little rough, but I think, you know, Coach Q's going to get these guys going, and they just are feeling each other out and knowing where they need to be. And you just got to get used to each other, and they haven't played with each other, you know, for very long at all. So I think it'll be okay. I'm interested to see how it goes once they start playing a little bit more in their division. They've been playing a lot of Eastern Conference teams, I think, so far. So once they start playing in the West against their own division, I think they seem to play a little bit more consistently. I think last year, even against the Eastern Conference teams, they struggled. They were like a 500 team or close to it playing the Eastern Conference, and then when they played the West, they did pretty well. So I think it'll be okay. Corey just needs to get going a little bit and get on his he can be a very dominant goalie and kind of keep teams from scoring. Just right now, last year he started off really strong, and this year he's struggling, so hopefully he can come around.
Yeah, but it seems something mentally is not clicking. You know, they seem to be
out of sorts.
Yeah, in all phases of the game. Do you think that they're just, I don't know, I don't want to say bored, but just not into it yet?
I even thought this last year when they were started off kind of like iffy. They were okay. Like, Kane seemed to just be really motivated because all the sex scandal stuff
right.
that was out last year. He seemed to be the one who just wanted to get to playing hockey and just start just dominating people. I think this year it's something where they've been to the playoffs so much, that's when they really start to, like, turn it on, is when it comes to, like, close to the playoff times, or, you know, when they have to make a run. I just think that for them, their main key guys are so used to the grind that they know that they need to conserve themselves to a certain extent. But the rest of the players need to also understand that they need to pick up a little bit. I think Kane's still going to be fine. Panarin's going to be fine. Taze has kind of been struggling, which is, you know, he needs to get his scoring going, and he's been struggling even like last year. He didn't score all that much, but he does a lot of other things on ice that really don't show up on, you know, the stat sheet. But I think if Taze can get going and they just get into the swing of things and realize that they're in this actual regular season and they need to start getting these points, because it's going to come back and haunt you if you let too many of these games go. And for them being 3-3, you know, I'm not entirely surprised with how many new pieces they have. I think it really just comes to chemistry that they need to be able to play with each other. And they've been dealing with a little bit of injuries with these newer kids on the bottom two lines too. The defense, you got a few new defensemen. So it's a lot of new pieces that just, they got to get used to where each other's going to be at, and playing is the only way they're going to get used to each other.
Yeah, because it seems like they're somewhat of a different team. They're not playing as fast as they used to. Maybe that has to do with them aging and realizing that it's, like you said, a grind.
Yep.
And they need to conserve themselves in some way. But hopefully they can get a spark and we can get some of that. But maybe the Cubs will inspire them. If the Cubs win the World Series, then they can say, hey, that's our domain.
Yeah.
Hopefully. We're the darlings of Chicago.
Yeah. Hopefully that is the case. Something needs to spark them, because right now they do look a little lackadaisical out there and struggling a little bit. And like I said, I think once Crawford gets himself in net and not giving up over 3 goals a game, I think you'll start to see this team turn around. But until that happens, I think you're going to see a 500 team. So hopefully Crawford and a few of these other pieces start to come around a little bit.
Yeah.
But they're scoring a lot, which is good. And I think that's the only reason why they're 3-3, is you're seeing a lot of goals being scored. So if they can keep that scoring up and then kind of crack down on the defense, I think they should be a really good team. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah. And they've got to do something about that penalty kill. I remember the game when I saw when they played the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs were down a man, and they still were able to get the puck into their own zone. And it's very rare that I see that with the Blackhawks.
It's pretty rough, watching their penalty kill. It hasn't been pretty. Let's just put it that way. I think that's it for the Blackhawks.
The Blackhawks.
We'll move on to the Bulls. They actually are starting their season tomorrow. They're going to be playing the Celtics, which the Celtics actually play tonight.
That's good.
Maybe we'll get a tired team, even though it's only the second game of the season. But, you know, back-to-back is always tough on a team. So hopefully we'll get a very tired Boston
Celtics
team.
Yeah, but the Celtics are young.
They are a young team. Are you excited for the baseball season or basketball season, or are you kind of
The season, yes. The Bulls, I still don't know what we're getting.
Yeah.
I'm happy that Taj Gibson is starting.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, I don't know what this means, if anything, but did you tell me this? Barkley and
Shaquille O'Neal.
Mm-hmm. Shaquille O'Neal, or at least they predicted that the Bulls would be better than the Knicks.
Yes. That's what they said last night between the Cavaliers game and the Warriors game. They were talking about the Eastern Conference of what it looks like and how bad the Knicks played against Cavaliers, and said that the Bulls, they will be a playoff team. They were kind of going over who they thought were going to be playoff teams, and the Bulls were one of the teams that they both felt were going to be there. Like I said, I think that the Eastern Conference is so up in the air when you get past that fourth seed that I think the Bulls have enough to be able to sneak in. The only thing that concerns me is a Hoiberg team that we saw last year played no defense. And if they don't play any defense, I don't see where they're going to get enough scoring to be able to win enough games. So it really is going to come down to, have they improved any defensively? If not, I'm with you on the Bulls not making it. But I think that hopefully the second year, Hoiberg has a little bit better plan of what he wants to do defensively, offensively, what they want to do. Hopefully now he's got a few more pieces that he can work with. But like you said, this is a team that is just full of question marks that's really, really tough to like fully get behind and say, yes, they're definitely going to be a playoff team. But like I said, there's enough bad teams in the Eastern Conference that I think that the Bulls have a chance of squeaking in there somehow.
Well, you know, during the preseason, they averaged, I think, 104 point something points, and they were 14th in the league, which is more than they did last year.
Yeah.
And then if you really stop and think about it, they do have a big three.
Right.
So, you know, they should be able to compete, obviously, and win their share of games. It's just you don't know how many games Dwayne Wade can play.
Right.
And that kind of thing. And I think Taj is going to make that starting five a really good unit. And the bench seems to have some decency there.
I think the defense, like we were talking about, I think the defense is going to come from, hopefully, Butler can kind of show a little bit of the defense that he was having while Thibodeau was here. And then Taj Gibson, I think, can play a pretty decent defense as well. And then I think when you bring in Portis, I think those three guys are going to be defensively very, very strong. It's just, and I think Wade is actually known as a pretty good defensive player. How much he has left in the tank, that's another story. But I think he was a very good defensive player himself.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I think, you know, they're going to be a little bit better than what they were last year. And Rondo, when he was with Boston, was a very good defensive player too. So Boston is a long time past for Rondo, but they do have players who have played defense really, really well. Will they get back to that? That is the big question mark. Because if they can play some type of defense, and if they score 100 points a game, that's good. Like, honestly, that's going to put them in a lot better position than what they were last year, because they struggled to score on certain nights and didn't know who was going to be the leader. Was it Derrick Rose? Is it going to be Butler? That's another question mark. Who is it going to be? Is it Wade? Is it Butler? They're saying it's Butler's team, but we're seeing more Wade than we are seeing Butler. And you even pointed this out last few weeks that we've talked about
media attention.
Yep. So those are all things that they're going to have to try and handle and figure out of, you know, is it a Butler team or is it a Wade team? And then how does the end of the games kind of, you know, how do they play out? Are you going to put it in the hands of Wade, who's been there many, many times, gone to championships and being able to help his team win? Or is it going to be a Butler team where you put the pressure on him to make these, you know, late game shots that your key guy has to make? So
wow, that's going to be interesting. Who do you give the ball to the last?
Yep.
Where do you have to make a shot? I didn't even think about that. But you know, I know that there'll be a pick and roll team. So based on the players they have, the age that they are, you'd think that the Bulls would come out and win their fair share of games early and then trail off as the season goes on, and hopefully they'll have enough to finish in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to think that at some point Taj is going to go down. At some point, well, they're going to be resting Wade,
right?
And the way that Butler plays, so you know there's going to be points during the season where they all have to visit the infirmary. So. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting basketball season, I think. But as far as the Bulls are concerned, I don't know where they fit just yet, but hopefully they'll be in the mix.
Yeah. I think there are so many question marks, and that's why it's hard to really like feel like you can get behind this team. It's just because Hoiberg's a question mark, Wade's a question mark, Rondo's a question mark. Like, you just go down the list, and it's just, there's so many question marks, and if things line up okay, like where they need to be,
yeah,
then they, you know, I think they're okay. But you deal with a season of injuries with your key components of what they've done the last few years with Rose and Noah and Pau Gasol being injured from time to time. And, you know, it was, they were never healthy these last 2 years of having this team that looked like they could make a deep playoff run. They just never lined up that they were all healthy together. I think it was the last two seasons, it was like 20 games together that they played as a starting unit. And then it was last year, it was about the same. It was like 25 games where the starting unit was able to play together, maybe even less than that. I just, when you don't have that consistency on your first line, it's going to be tough. And so we'll see. I hope they all stay healthy, because I think that's really going to be a big indicator of how well they do. So,
yeah, but the thing of it is that the question marks come in because it's not that you necessarily question their individual ability. You know that they're all capable players. It's just that you don't know how they'll play together, how it'll all fit.
Right.
And that's the question. But otherwise, if you said, well, who's on your team? And you said, well, I've got Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler. You know, these are all guys who've had success. So.
Right.
Hopefully Hoiberg can orchestrate, and that's another thing too. He's not, you know, they're playing an offense that he's not necessarily known for.
Right. He hasn't been able to implement what he would like to implement. And that really comes down to, like, if you're a general manager and you bring in a coach, you should be prepared to be able to make some moves to help this coach succeed. And they made it really, really tough on Thibodeau, and they're still doing the same thing with Hoiberg. It's like, you need to be on the same page as a coaching staff and upper management to be able to move your team in the direction that they need to go to be the most successful. If you're giving pieces to your coach to be somewhat successful, you're not really working together, you're just going to struggle. And you saw that last year, is that, you know, Hoiberg wanted to run it one way, but he didn't have the pieces to be able to run the offense he wanted to, and they struggled the entire year. And it's frustrating to see that this team can't get on the same page from upper management all the way down to the coaching staff to the players.
Right.
That they just, it's just a hodgepodge of just ugliness that seems to be, you're like, okay, yeah, it's a team. You got a bunch of these bodies that individually look like they could be good, but can they come together as a team? That's the question. And, you know, luckily we have a game tomorrow and we'll be able to figure that out of, you know, hopefully getting an idea of what this Bulls team is capable of doing, because they do play a pretty tough team that made the playoffs last year in Boston. So I think it's a good, you know, measuring stick for them to figure out where they're at.
But yeah, that's the thing, is that it doesn't seem like this management group has any idea, or at least they haven't shared it, of the direction they're going in. Because what happens next year with Dwayne Wade? What happens with Rajon Rondo? Do they have a plan? Are they looking to build through the draft, or not necessarily build, but acquire players for the future through the draft, or are they going to bring in free agents?
Right.
I don't know what the future of this team is, where they, like before with the previous regime, you know, it was clear that they were drafting to put together a team that would be successful for a number of years.
Right.
You had Derrick Rose and then Joakim Noah, and these were young guys. They brought in other young guys and a few veterans here and there,
mm-hmm.
kind of like what the Cubs did. But with this is sort of, like you said, this guy's available, let's get him, you know, and this guy's available, let's get him. They just threw all these guys together and say, okay, here's the ball, go play. And then, you know, with Hoiberg, you know, this is the players that you have, make it work.
It, like, to me, it felt like in this off season, of them picking up the people that they picked up, it was like they fell asleep and, like, they forgot to set their alarm, and they woke up too late, and they looked, and then they were like, oh, well, we got to get somebody, because we just let these two people go, and then we let this person go, so we got to get some people to replace them, so we'll do this. And it just, the guys that you would have hoped they would have tried to go after, they just completely, like, slept on.
Right.
And they just decided, oh, we'll just get the leftovers of whatever these that's left and that no other team wanted. We'll take these guys. And that's sad, because it's like, there were plenty of pieces that they were be able to sign, but they didn't make any effort to do so. And that's what's frustrating, is that this Bulls team, we have a fan base that can get behind their teams really, really well. And on a regular basis, the Bulls have failed in being able to, like, figure out how to build this team in the last, you know, Thibodeau's teams were great because it took, kind of brought us back to, okay, we had playoff runs and we were able to have a playoff team. But before that, it was really, really bad from Michael Jordan all the way through the many years since Michael Jordan left. It took a while for them to bounce back. And now it just feels like we're getting back to that era of the Bulls are tough to watch. I hope that's not the case. I hope this team does kind of just show us something that maybe we don't see, and they overperform. And hopefully they're a motivated team, because no one's expecting them to do anything. So hopefully that motivates them to play harder than what they've been playing, you know, even last year. So
I think so. Yep. But if you look at it, a lot of the picks that they've made over the last few years haven't really worked out. They had to trade Tony Snell. Mm-hmm. And I forget his name, but he was a guard named Teague. He didn't work out, and it looks like Mirotić is not working out because he should be starting now, and I think that's what they wanted him to do. That's why they picked him, and he's on the bench because he's so inconsistent.
Yeah,
and that's a big problem too. A lot of the, they started out well with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and Luol Deng and other players like that, and they were putting together a team where they were adding pieces that made sense.
Yeah.
And now it's just, let's get somebody to fill out the team.
Yeah, you just scratch your head. Where moves made sense a few years ago, and now you have no idea. But I'm excited that basketball's back. Nonetheless, it sounds like we don't have very high hopes. But I think that this team has a potential of being able to squeak into the playoffs. So hopefully I'm right. I like to see our teams in the playoffs, and I don't know how far they'd go. Probably not very far if they're an eighth seed and they probably have to play the Cavs. That's never a good team that you want to face right off the bat in the playoff run. But I'm getting ahead of ourselves. They haven't even played one game yet. So, but I'm good at that, of hoping and dreaming and believing in a team that maybe most other people don't see much out of. So we'll see. It's fun. That's why we're here, is to be able to talk about these things and just bounce ideas off of each other of what could happen. I think that's it for today.
Yeah, well, there's one other thing, back to the Cubs.
Yeah.
Last night in Cleveland, whenever there would be a right-handed batter that would come up for the Cubs, there was a guy in the stands who had a huge sign that said, "Bartman for president." And he would flash it every time. I don't know how he knew this, but every time the Fox would get a close-up on the batter, he would be in the shot with his sign, "Bartman for president."
That guy, kudos to that guy. I actually think that's quite funny. I know Cubs fans probably don't think it's funny, but
I thought it was funny.
I think it's pretty entertaining. Well, shout out to that guy. We don't know his name, but shout out to him. Well, Brian, thanks again. This was a good time. We'll be back next week. This was the No Look Pass. I am Brett Shishkoff.
And I'm Brian Hawkins. Yeah.
And once again, go Cubbies. Hopefully they will have a World Series in their grasps here after tonight, and they'll have a few more wins here. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good week, everybody.